Welcome to the next episode of Flint Coat Talks. It's your boy Dano. I'm here in Austin today, and I have two of my good friends that we're going to have on the podcast today, Miss Sheer Abakasis and Mr. Michael Toll. So let's take just a second to introduce yourself. Sheer, can you tell us who you are and who you represent?
Yep. So Sheer, I'm the CEO and founder of Firmus. In Firmus, we analyze construction documents before you start the bid and before you start construction, and automatically with AI identify design errors and design issues that needs to be addressed early.
Awesome. I'm so glad you're here.
And I'm Michael Toll. I am Flint Co's quality director. And so I ended up joining Flint Co back in 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic. And you know, it was a time when I think we were going through a lot of growth and trying to identify ways to, you know, handle and mitigate all the challenges that came with that. And so basically everything was an open market at that point in time, and taking over a quality team that, you know, had a lot of unstructure to it led us to be able to start understanding, hey, what's out there on the market and what can help us be better than we were at that point in time, and, you know, what will get us down that path of perfection.
Awesome. Thanks, Michael. I'm glad you're here today, too. Thanks for everything you're doing with Flint Co. from a quality perspective and helping us continue to push the envelope to be better. So, Sheer, first of all, thank you so much for being here today. I know that we've been back and forth trying to get you on, and we're finally here, and we're finally going to be able to talk. So I'm super excited about that. So just for the listeners that aren't familiar with Firmus or aren't familiar with even who you are, can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you even decided that Firmus was something you wanted to do? So help, just take a few minutes and help the listener get to know you better.
So I'm from Israel originally, and my background is in data science and technology. And before I can share how I got to construction, it is for me important to understand how I even got to technology, and it tells a lot about the story of how I got to construction as well. Mm-hmm. So when I was young, I started at the age of four, as a ballerina. I was dancing ballet.
Okay.
And when you're doing a competitive sport, you have a very, you don't have a lot of social life, to be honest.
Okay. That's fair.
You finish school, you go out to practice until the evening, and when you get back home, it's already night. And that's what brought me to computers. I wanted to create my own, let's say, virtual world. I wanted to create a video game that mm-hmm. allowed me to connect with other people in different places in the world. Mm-hmm. And I was very young. I think I was like 10 or 11 at that time that I wanted to build that. And my brother offered to teach me how to code so I can build that interface. So he was teaching me code, and that was the first time that I realized that if you know how to code and if you understand technology, you can solve any problem that you want. And that was my first attraction or passion around technology. When I got to the age of 18, it's the time in Israel when you join the military, the Israeli Defense Force. I got to a prestigious cyber unit inside the intelligence force. So intelligence is also my background. Intelligence is all about data. Usually in Israel, women has to serve 2 years, but I loved my job so much that I stayed about 6 years in the military. And what I studied there is the power of data. And then when I combine it with the ability to code, when you're a person who knows how to analyze a big amount of data and you combine it with the ability to code, which allows you to process big amounts of data that you cannot process if mm-hmm. you're just going over that manually, this combination to me is a superpower. Mm-hmm. And when I got off the military, I wanted to use this uh-huh. superpower. I wanted to take this ability to understand data, to analyze data, and then to use code to understand it even better. To, you know, we always say, like, with data, it's like with so many trees, you can't see the forest, right? So
you need
to be able to digest it. Only technology, only code can allow you to do that. So I was researching different industries. I was researching hospitality. I was researching construction. And with all the industries that I was researching, construction was the one that the impact of using this data was the biggest. The areas where data can be useful, like rework, like estimation, like choosing the right projects, and even affecting the day-to-day life. And we talked about it yesterday, how the life in construction can be stressful. The impact was so big that I couldn't avoid it.
Amazing, because when you think of it, in our world, in construction, everything that we work with, from drawings to specifications to any other contractual documentation that's out there, it's all data points, right? And not only is it that, it's the way we communicate. And if we look at anything, there's opportunities for us to get misguided, misled through poor communications. And to have something out there that's looking to better structure that data, better understands, right, how to best deploy that information in a way that it's more transcribable and translatable, so that we're not feeling like we're behind the eight ball here on anything, right? I mean, that's going to help us out tremendously.
Yeah, you said it right, and I remember you said it in a panel we shared about how drawings are the way of communication in construction. Basically, in construction, you communicate through drawings. This is your language. This is the document where you write down all the intent and everything that you want to move to the other side. So if those drawings are not clear, it's like we're not speaking the same language. It's like we can't understand each other.
I love the story about being a ballerina and where that led you. Like, you would have never thought that, right? Your parents put you in ballet so you could be a great dancer, right? And look where you are today. I'm sure they're extremely proud of where you are and what you're doing.
The cool part is, even if you're a ballerina, you're coming home and it's dark at night. And kind of, I was thinking, hey, it's the life of the construction worker right there. You know, it's dark, it's come back home, it's dark.
And what I did when I got home was I played Nintendo, right? Or I was definitely not working on the code.
No, so same. I was doing all of those games. That was my niche. But then when I wanted to develop my own game, that was the twist. That was where, okay, I learned I can do other stuff.
So did you end up developing a game when you were 10 years old to be able to connect to people across the world, or is that?
I did. I think I got like 200 users in that.
You did?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Nice. That's awesome.
But with a lot of help from my brother, I have to say.
Mm-hmm. And is the platform still around, or did you shut that down? Okay, you shut it down.
Now we have Meta. I think I was the one who invented this this outside reality.
I think so. Mark Zuckerberg,
reality.
If you're listening.
Yeah, I think he stole it from me, actually.
Oh, that's great. So tell me a little bit about Firma. So you said 6 years ago you kind of decided is when you were going to do that. How long did it take you to develop the software?
The biggest challenge, even before developing the software, was prioritization. Mm-hmm. Because I understood that there is an issue with design issues that we need to discover as early as possible. But then the more I dig into that problem, I understand that there are so many types of design issues. We try to divide this work to types. So we say, okay, we have bidability issues. Those are design issues that make it harder on you to make a good estimation. Those would be things that affect your quantities and materials. So if we have missing information on designs, or we have contradicting information on designs, our estimation, our budget will be inaccurate. We have another type of issues that are constructability issues. Those are things that are okay on the design, but when you go out to the field, you can't actually build it like that. And that creates rework and delays. And you need to have the contractor looking at the drawings and applying their knowledge as early as possible. So we saw there are so many design issues we can cover. And we had to find what should we start with. And I think FlintCo here were actually super crucial in our process, because this is the work that we did together. We wanted to sit down, we wanted to look on what are the most repeated RFIs, what are the most expensive RFIs, what are the design issues that take you the most amount of time to look for yourselves manually. And that way, we always try to focus on the 20-80. What are the 20% of design issues that are causing 80% of the problems? And that, to your question, that was the longest process, identifying those design issues, prioritizing them, because with code, if you give me a problem, if you give me an instruction, what you want to happen, this is our thing. This is our expertise. We can code it. We can do it for you. But defining what are those things that needs to be coded first, that was the biggest challenge.
Yeah. The key thing is you're touching on the fact that, you know, problems can be seen through design, right? As opposed to just necessarily seeing those for the first time in the field. And I mentioned earlier, I joined, you know, FlintCo back in 2020, and we're going through all of the growth and you know, new projects that came through the pandemic. And we really started with a very unstructured quality group, right? We have different subject matter experts that are really deployed individually on projects out in the field, but we never really gave that onus to really look at the design development, right? Understanding the design progression and understanding what the inherent quality concerns could be through what we were getting, you know, eyes on, at least during pre-construction. And that's where being able to really focus on and say, okay, you know, if we're going to really change quality here at FlintCo, it's going to be by focusing on driving quality in the design phase. You know, deliberately deploying a constructability review program was number one on my agenda. And being able to go out there and see tools like Firmus, you know, that are being deployed out there to help us understand and capture those elements, it was a hand-in-hand combination that we just really wanted to run with. And so glad that we were able to meet through that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask how we ended up meeting, how we ended up hooking up and being able to help you with that prioritization, because that was the next question I was going to ask you, is like, how much practice did you have to do that? But first, let's talk a little bit about how we met and why we thought you'd be a good partner and vice versa.
Yeah, I think it really goes also to the point that we have here within FlintCo, a lot of support behind technology and innovation. And so really reaching out to Firmus really stemmed from my involvement in the TIC, the Technology Innovation Council, and then also understanding specifically what's out there on the market that can help with this, you know, quality forward constructability review program that I was beginning to implement. And so starting to look out at places like our Procore hub, right? And understanding what tools are out there, we were able to bring Firmus into one of our technology innovation committee discussions here at FlintCo and really start learning what the tool offered. And it was during that demo that we really began, you know, getting some really positive feedback from folks on the pre-con side of the house that attended that, as well as the operation side of the house. And, you know, knowing that we could go a lot farther than where we were today or at that point, it was just something that we definitely wanted to start having, you know, some key discussions on. And from there, touch base with Shear and the team, and we ran a proof of concept, and it's been positive feedback throughout.
Yeah, and from there it was iterative, because the more we progress, we add more and more checks to the software, and we always do it in collaboration. So we always ask and check what are the next thing we should work on. And it's developing. When we just started, I think we had much less checks, and now we're adding more and more and more that are actually following the needs from FlintCo and other customers that are using Firmus.
Yeah, that's been the great part. I think even when we were going through our just initial proof of concept activities, it's the amount of feedback you're looking for and how you're actually very transparent and how you're utilizing that feedback. It was just so welcoming, because there's so many companies out there that'll do these with you, and they'll do them for a short term and really not listen to the results that come out of the process. But Firmus was really great working with them hand in hand to help identify, you know, what are some critical aspects that they could build onto their technology roadmap, right? What are the things that can help us in the long run, you know, better address some of the issues that we're looking for when it comes to constructability or clarity of design. And, the cool thing out of this is it was very much a working relationship that we've built, where we're having monthly conversations now just to that fact. We're able to have this in a way as well where it's not, we're able to break down some of the traditional stereotypes that are there between contractors and designers and architects, right? Everybody's pointing fingers one way at each other, where this is now coming off as we're able to produce a product here back to our design team during pre-construction that's very objective, right? I mean, it's a very objective measure of where everything's at. How this benefits us as a construction company to understand, the value that comes out of it and really get it into the hands of our design teams early enough so it's not rework for them later, right? They're able to work off of the results that we've got coming out here on a fairly quick scale.
Yeah. So I was going to ask real quick before we get into more of, I wrote down like six things while y'all were both talking, so we're going to, lots of content here, but for those listeners that aren't familiar with the program, tell us just a little bit about it and kind of like Daniel gets a brand new set of plans on a Friday afternoon and I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to sit around and review these all weekend or am I going to dump them in the Firmus software? Tell us a little bit about how that process works and what the output looks like.
Yeah, and I think that Michael, if you explain about your process, it's better.
Well, and I think it also starts with the fact that I think we're talking AI here. We're talking artificial intelligence, and everybody, I think, first thing that comes to mind is like, ChatGPT and all of these language model things that are out there that can tell you anything, create anything for you. There's so many different models out there though on the market when it comes to AI and what it can do. And Firmus is really built on a platform of what's called computer vision technology, right? Yeah. And so could you expand a little bit on what like the computer vision technology does as terms of how it's analyzing drawings? Because my understanding is it's machine learning, it's doing more of a repetitive review of really what's on those 2D sets. Is that right?
Yeah, so the technology behind it is fascinating because it works in layers.
Okay.
As you said, it's ChatGPT works on text. Firmus is working on the images, on the drawings. So the first stage that Firmus do, the first technology that comes in handy is indeed the computer vision piece. So we train models to identify elements on the construction documents. And that's what's unique about Firmus AI, because other computer vision AI models can identify a door in the context of the real world. So this door right here, if I take a picture of it and I show it to existing AI models, it will be able to say this is a door that exists today.
Okay.
But a door in the context of a construction drawing that has a very specific way to draw a door, that's a unique data. And that's the uniqueness behind Firmus. We are taking all of those drawings and all the different ways that people draw things. So different doors have different signals and different geometries. So we are fitting this inside our models. We are able to identify the elements and basically read a document like a human would.
Okay.
So in the back end, and Michael, it would be amazing if you can share what happens in the front end. So what's the process that you are doing as a user? But I can tell you what happens in the back end. In the back end, when you upload your drawings, the technology will read the drawings from all the different sources. So the software will look at the architecture and then the electrical and then the mechanical and plumbing, and will take the data from all those sources, including the schedules, including the specs soon. All the different sources where information is being detailed, and compare this information. So we will, that way we will be able to see missing information or information that is contradicting pretty easily for the software to do.
Yeah, which really balances well with what our team internally is doing. And so what Cher's referring to, when we're looking at a set of drawings doing constructability review internally as a quality team, our subject matter experts are trying to look at the technical details of the design. Is there something that may, you know, be out of code here, a potential code issue, or is there something here that might, you know, potentially have some downstream effects of, you know, wrong materials, you know, clashing with or not corroborating with other materials on the project, or design instances, cases where you might have, like, you know, angular planes and things like that coming together, right? Where we need to have some caution in terms of how things are sequenced. Really, what we're deploying Firmus at is really doing this overall scan of our drawings to do, like you were mentioning, take a look and make sure that, you know, our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed when it comes to all of the clarity requirements and the architectural schedules and finishes are matching what's on the drawing and what's in the schedule. All the things that we would definitely do, you know, with the labor that we have, but why would we want to focus our efforts there if we can be focused more on the technical components of the design, mm-hmm. if there's a tool out there that can supplement and support us that way?
Yeah, I think about time I spent in pre-construction. When you get a set of drawings, it's always, hey, we're going to have it by close of business on Friday. And
right.
Close of business on Friday for me is like 3:30, right? For other people, it's like 11:59 p.m. So you think of getting a set of drawings in and having to turn around a price within 2 to 3 weeks. If you got a set of drawings that's 400 or 500 pages long, you could spend those 3 weeks reviewing the drawings, looking for those technical details. Mm-hmm. And we'll be able to find some of those things just like you discussed, like mm-hmm. what we're looking for. But the consistency amongst whether it's glass types or door locations or even details that are referenced, and maybe the detail's not there yet, or maybe there's a page in the on the table of contents that's not in the drawings. Those are things that I wouldn't typically look for, right? Well, as a 20 plus year construction guy, I'm looking at these four things that have burned me on previous projects, and I'm making notes of those.
And in that process, we're also entrusting our trade partners to come back and provide us mm-hmm. all this great information. So what's the quality of the actual document that we're giving to our trade partners, right? And if we can run something like Firmus real quickly on this before we actually put that into a bid package, right, it eliminates the amount of RFIs that are coming in the pre-construction phase back from our trades, right? So putting clarity in the hands of the trade partners can help us really better lock in, you know, the initial estimates that we build and budgets that we build for our projects, just because we're more consistent and we're just that more confident in the quality of the design deliverable that we have.
And it's not only the time that it takes, and also, as you said, I'm going to focus on the things that I saw in the past. It's not systematic. Mm-mm. Like, the software is systematic. It knows what it looks for, and those are the things that it covers. But another thing about that, we see less and less people willing to do this work. And also, you need to do it several times as the design progresses. So now, Michael, maybe you can share what stages you apply this in. A lot of the customers apply this in 50% to 100% CD, because that's the time when you have design issues, you shouldn't have them. Mm-hmm. You know you shouldn't have them. Mm-hmm. In the earlier stages, like the DD phase, when Firmus finds issues, it's kind of, okay, we know we will have issues because the designs are not complete, but at least if you start earlier, you can also track it. You can see that the issues are actually resolved the more you progress with the phases. So if a person would need to do it in the DDs and then again in the CDs mm-hmm. and then again in IFP, then that's too much for a person to do.
And there's a couple of things that come into play around timing, and you hit on a key one there, Cher, is, you know, when we started developing our constructability review program here at Flinco, I kind of tasked my team with helping me define, because I'm not an architect myself, right. And I really haven't been involved in that side of, you know, the construction process all that much. What are the best times, right, for us to deploy an actual review on a set of design drawings? And looking at my team, really the feedback that I got was, you know, midpoint to say 50% to 75% of design development DD documentation is really when your large configurations are starting to get set in your design. So that's probably a good time to start rolling with it. But for something like Firmus, really, we started looking at, you know, CD level, mid CD level documentation, because we didn't want to come out too early to our design teams and say, hey, there's all these gaps and issues here potentially, right? We know that they have things to work on as well, right? It's more of the focus on, you know, for us to apply this at a later stage of design. So CD became the spot for that. But that said, do we always GMP at CD? No. Right? So when we want to be more confident in what we're locking in numbers on, it might be well for us to deploy this at a DD level. You know, and hence is the case with, I think, a lot of the documentation we saw out of one of our projects out of Memphis, where we were able to, I know we were doing at least pre-purchasing of some glazing out there. And, you know, before at least we had 100% documentation for the entire project. And we were able to at least run Firmus early on that, so that we were able to catch some gaps in terms of, you know, what was tagged incorrectly there before we actually made some purchase orders. And so down the line, right, that saves us a lot of potential pain in the field when we ordered the wrong quantities of materials, or trade partners ordered the wrong quantities of materials based on what we've provided them.
And there's another advantage in starting even earlier when you know there would be issues in the DD phase. And I think it came up in one of your podcasts, actually, when you talked with the design teams. And they said that they want this feedback, but they want to have it up front. When they get the feedback, when it's already, they're already in like 100% CD, and then they need to go back and fix everything and change everything. And what they actually said in that podcast is that they saw that most of the design issues actually happen when they redesign. So they really want to avoid this redesign. And that's why when you can come up front, and that's another point that you mentioned, is the objective. Firmus is objective. It's not like when a contractor comes to the design team and says, oh, those are all the issues that you have, and you're like kind of the bad cop that is telling them where they are doing wrong. Firmus is objective. It's a data source. So you can collaborate on that and say, okay, Firmus is the bad cop, right? It's not us telling you what the issues are. It's the software that tells like what are all the gaps, and we can start earlier than the CDs.
That was the next question I was going to ask you, is like over the last 20 years, like just the quality of drawings we've seen decrease. I don't want to say drastically, but drastically, just from the first set of drawings that I first got when I was an intern, you know, working on Reliant Stadium in downtown Houston, to today working on a project over at UT, there's different things that have been deferred to the contractor to design, delegated design. There's different things we've had to pick up. There's different reasons for that. And what do y'all foresee some of the reasons why the drawing quality has declined?
I look at it as well as the complexity of the projects have increased. And our ability to be nimble and agile to the changes in not just this technology, but the technology that gets applied to facilities in our built environment and get that defined and sequenced early in design drawings, it takes a lot of skill that we may not just have there yet, right? So we're trying to figure out how does this all play in well over the period of design progression. And the challenge then becomes, hey, there's probably a lot of loose ends here at various stages that need to get filled.
And just like us, I'm sure their schedules are just as cramped, right?
We just talked about the deadlines that are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So it must be one reason as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to point to, is just saying, you know, everybody's schedule is shorter, you know, and I think there's reasons for that inside our nation. Just everybody is, I want it and I want it now type thing. I don't care if it's a $300 million project, like I'm ready to have it tomorrow. It's like,
with five other options, right?
And that's, and I think that's just part of the industry that we're in right now, right? We got to understand that there's other things that we can do as a partner with design teams to say, hey, this is another reason you want to sign us up. This is another reason we want to show up to the table with designers and say, hey, look, we've partnered with Firmus and this is what they can do, because everybody needs a quality check. It doesn't matter who it is. It's my work. It's Michael's work. It's your work. It's any designer's work that somebody needs to go back and look at it. So you already kind of talked about it, but I was going to ask is really, what are designers' feedback? I guess as long as you get it to them in the DD phase, it's okay. Like the folks on the Target Value Design podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let me know what you're seeing from your partners. But in Firmus, we are seeing architects becoming more and more open to it. Mm-hmm. When we just started Firmus and we presented it to architects, a lot of the times the point of risk came up. That the risk is actually on the contractor, because a lot of the times you're doing a GMP, you commit to a certain price, and then if you can't spot a discrepancy on the drawings, it will come from your contingency.
Sure.
So that's when we just started. We understood that the risk is on the contractor, and that's where we started approaching contractors. But now we're seeing a different approach from the design team. The design teams are coming to us and actually saying, okay, even if the design, if the risk is not on us, even if the risk is on the contractor, we still want to be able to know about all of those RFIs in advance. We still want to clear our drawings before it becomes an issue, and we want to improve the communication that we have with the shareholders. So it started as a risk problem, but now it's a coordination problem or collaboration problem. Mm-hmm. And now architects are becoming more, they want to participate in this much more.
Yeah, it not only saves time on the pre-construction side, but I think about from the construction side, right? If you have a GMP, not all of them are 50% or 100% CDs. If you got a GMP at 100% DDs, and there's a bust in the door count or the door schedule or something with glass, you're saving also the construction team down the line from having a really tough conversation with somebody that says,
exactly,
hey, you signed up to do everything that's in the drawings today. I know it's not clear, but yeah, you should have submitted an RFI and you're going to have to participate in this cost. Really tough conversation to have, especially when we rely on our trade partners to meet these ever-shrinking schedules that we sign up for as well. So I feel like not only is it helping pre-construction, but it helps further down the line to diffuse some of those crucial conversations or tough conversations that your field staff would have to have even a year and a half later, when you realize when the whole facade's going up that you've got four panels of glass that are wrong or that are clear and they're supposed to be spandrel or you're short six doors or something like that, right? I feel like that's it's not just in the pre-construction side.
That's true. And, you know, that was one of the initial questions I had this year when we were going through this process of the proof of concept is like, are we really your right clientele, or are you supposed to be marketing this actually to like design entities out there? And I was like, well, you know, they have their own internal QA processes too, but you know, construction contractors want to have that on their side as well. And it's like, that's great. Yeah, we'll deploy it. We love it. Honestly, you know, the first few constructability reviews that we did where we actually applied this as part of that process, we're kind of hesitant in terms of how do we actually float this information over to the design team. So here's our nice technical review that we've done internally of all the little things. And oh, here, by the way, right?
Right.
And then it didn't become long before that, by the way, was... you know that we want that again.
Yeah.
You know,
where's the Firmus report? I see that.
Exactly. Exactly. And to the point that we were going through the pre-construction process for, and this one sticks in my mind, particularly Capitol Hill High School up in Oklahoma City, where we were working. We probably did three different constructability reviews over the course of the design period there with the architect. And each time they requested, you know, a Firmus report out.
Really?
In many cases, now we're getting to the point where our design companies out there and architects that we're working with are understanding the review process that we're going through, and our internal constructability review is essentially a markup in Bluebeam review that they know they have their own Bluebeam review going on. Hey, can we just download those outputs and put it directly into ours? Mm-hmm. Let's just do that rather than y'all having it separate. So it's becoming a much more workable relationship. and like I said, I think, you know, that we're starting to understand the value that's being generated out there by Firmus, and the architects are understanding that too, that we're working with and why we're deploying it. So the earlier the better, and they're asking for it now.
Yeah.
That's great. That's good for you too, right?
And it's amazing to see the change. I mean, we witness it. We see the change. Exactly what you said at the beginning. A lot of our customers said, okay, how are we going to tell them that there are issues? And we see now architects coming to us and say, okay, we actually want to be proactive about it. We don't want to wait for the contractor to tell us. We want to find all of those things in advance. And that's very good for us to see, because at the beginning it was hard for us to say, okay, well, we're going to the contractor because they hold the risk, but the architects can actually help us solve it. So it's amazing to see the collaboration right now.
It saves them time too when we get in the drawings.
Yeah.
Once we get into construction, I'm sorry, and during construction administration, where it's kind of like, hey, this would have been 75 RFIs that we would have to write, right? And if you talk to different designers, they say every RFI we get costs us, they know how many thousands of dollars it costs. By the time somebody reads it, they route it, they follow up on it, it comes back in, they update the drawings. It's multiple thousands of dollars per RFI. And early on in the process, you can definitely save it. And I feel like it's one of those things that the more it's brought up and the more you talk about it, everybody begins to see the collective advantage. And it's for the owner as well. And the owner's not having to have those tough conversations where they tell us, well, it was a GMP, you should have had it. And then we look at the architect and say, hey, how come we didn't have it? And they're like, I don't know, you should have written an RFI. And then meanwhile, it's a CM at risk contract, and we're the ones at risk, and we're the ones that end up paying for some of those wrong, or indifferent, right? That's just kind of sometimes the way that it happens.
And then even beyond that now, you know, with the way Firmus has gone, and there's so much more focus now on cross-discipline review that's going on in that, a lot of the things that we're seeing might not necessarily even be captured as an RFI. They might not have been understood until they became a field change notice, right? And so our ability to be able to look at almost a 2D level clash detection in a way, right, is trying to bring forward a lot more opportunity to, you know, eliminate design changes in the field later on, when it can, you know, definitely hurt us when it comes to scheduling cost at that point.
Yeah, and you mentioned the owner as well, the communication with the owner. So we see in the industry that it's now getting to about a third of all the disputes and claims between owners and contractor due to incomplete design or ambiguities on design. So it can do wonders to the relationships, and then to the willingness to then keep working together, and those owners coming back to you because they know that you don't have those surprises when construction starts.
Then the drawings don't just represent the architect, or don't just represent the designer. Like you said, the drawing is the main form of communication, right, between the owner and the contractor. It's like, hey, this is what you're telling me. Between the specifications and this set of drawings, you've explained everything you want out of this project, right? And if it's not clear, it's tough for everybody that's involved.
Yeah, so,
exactly. And what's good is what we've started to see with Firmus is that, again, as you're developing your product further, and I think AI Match is a great part of this now, like you've started to launch that now, is there's more and more opportunities for us to better understand that communication, right? And so the overlay feature that they've just included, AI Match, we're starting to utilize that. So now when any, you know, project is coming out, and I want to make sure that, for instance, an underground utility plan can be overlaid well with a foundation plan so that we're not going to hit anything. By God, it's great. I can do that for any sentence real quick like that, right? And scales it for you and everything. You don't have to pick your 3 points anymore. It's,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's great. So the key thing here is, like, our relationship, they've been able to kind of hear where we have our pain points, right? And they're adjusting and they're modifying their tool based on those. And it's really great to be able to deploy those early on during the design stage. So again, we're not at a point where we're hitting into those errors in the field. And yeah, the overlay function is just another item
Amazing.
That's great in the toolkit.
Yeah, it's a very new feature. So amazing to hear.
You smiled when he said that. So
yeah,
that's
it's amazing to hear this feedback because it's very new.
So. Yeah. So what's the review time? That was something I wrote down a few minutes ago, but we didn't really get back to it. Like when you put a set of plans in there, kind of what can you expect on being able to get the output? Is it hours? Is it days? Is it weeks? Or what's the...
We have a service level agreement around, what, like 4 days or something like that in place.
So, yeah, the AI works. When the AI runs, it takes minutes for the AI to run. What we do internally before we release the report is we go over the AI results to make sure that we don't have false positives, that the quality is good, and then we deliver it back in between, yeah, 2 business days to 4 business days. That's the SLA. And when you get the report, you get it in several ways. You have the main dashboard that tells you how many issues you have, how it is divided to how many you have from every discipline, how many you have from every check, what are the issues that are high priority, medium priority, low priority. And then the other side of the platform is the actual issues where you can dive in and you can see the markups on the drawings. You can look at the drawings and see where firms find the problem with the markups that attach to it.
So how do you determine what's high, medium, or low?
So that part is still not automated. And that's why from the moment that the AI is giving us all the issues, that's part of the things that we are then going over the AI and set up the priorities. This is something that we will add to automation pretty soon because we're now understanding better how you would like to see those priorities. Those priorities are mainly set according to the impact that this issue is going to have on your project. Mm-hmm. So impact usually refers to the price. If that's, we have problem with 2 different glasses, one of them is more expensive than the other, then the first issue would be a high priority one. We also talk about quantities. If we have a problem with a door, but that repeats 500 times in the project, then that would be another high priority element.
2 to 4 days, that's pretty quick.
It is.
It's one of those things that would take us weeks in order to be able to do that. And that's one of the things, increasing the efficiency, which is back to, Michael, kind of what you alluded to when we first started the conversation, when you started here, is trying to figure out a way to help us from a quality perspective be a better, well-rounded group and really be able to help on the pre-construction side and driving that quality early on to make sure that we have good jobs, right? Because
it's not like everybody's taxed, right? Our superintendents, our project managers, they're on a project, they're coming off, they're going to another project. And we were talking about this recently too, is there's little amount of downtime that you have to get yourself situated and really in the weeds and understanding that next project you're going to. In some cases, the first time you're seeing those drawings might be the next day you're stepping onto that job site.
Right.
And so how much can we do, again, to further that communication in advance, right? To make sure that everybody's as aware as they can be. And that's where, again, deploying something like this really plays into that. It's something we can easily put in your hands in advance and make sure that you're not necessarily just learning these issues for the first time.
Yeah, I feel like jobs, they don't just inherently go bad halfway through, right? They go bad because the effort early on was not done right, is the way I feel. Just on having managing projects for the last 20 years, you have jobs that are bad because the pre-con effort wasn't there, or you didn't have the right numbers, you didn't have the right bidder, you had people that missed things on purpose or not on purpose, and you get halfway into the job and all of a sudden the atmosphere begins to turn as those tough conversations start to happen. The job atmosphere starts to turn, people start to turn on each other, people start to only worry about themselves and not look out for other people. And for our folks that are paid to put work in on a daily basis, it's important to get the job done right. Michael, kudos to you for realizing that early on in the process and wanting to deploy something to be able to help the operational folks as they put projects into place. So I think this is just another step in how Flintco is going to be continue to be better and better.
Michael, you mentioned AI Match. So just back to the product, AI Match, for example, is something that is providing you results in real time. And those are the things that we want to add more and more to be able to give you the data as soon as you need, as fast as possible.
Yeah, it sounds like just another benefit, right? Something else that's going to help make us better. So one of the things that, you know, as AI became more and more prevalent over the last several years, one of the scares for people that aren't familiar with it is, well, you know, AI is going to take my job, and I've been doing my job for 50 years or 40 years or whatever it is, and I'm not going to give up my job to a computer, whatever it might be, right? Can you help dispel that myth? Like, help us to say, hey, this is really going to help us be more efficient rather than take somebody's job?
Yeah, so that was a comment that we received at the beginning. But the same people who actually commented this, now the way that they talk about Firmus is, first of all, one comment that we heard is, Firmus allows me to sleep better at night knowing that I did everything that I can with the tools that I have. And Firmus is another tool in your toolkit. So you better use it. And that's what I'm telling people. And I think OpenAI said it before us, that AI would not replace you, but a person who uses AI will replace you. Because this is a person that is using all the available tools that they have. And now the way that people see Firmus is this step forward that they are taking from reviewing those and doing all those mundane tasks of reviewing the documents to being the decision makers, to apply their knowledge to offer resolutions or communicate with their shareholders. And those are the meaningful parts of their job. And this is what they studied for. This is what they want to do. Mm-hmm. It's a kickstarter. It's not the complete work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you said about the mundane task, right? Typically, sometimes early drawing review could be given to the junior estimator, the person that's got the least amount of experience, but assigned to do a very important part of the drawing review, right? Just because you're the folks that have been in pre-con for 20 to 25 years aren't the people that are going to be flipping page to page and looking at quantities and things like that, right? So it feels like this is a great chance, like you said, to take a step forward and be able to put away that task and let AI take care of it. You get output, easily readable, that's wanted by owners, that's wanted by architects, that's going to definitely be wanted by the pre-con team to make sure that we get quantities right, we get the drawings, you know, spick and span by the time we really have to bid it.
At the same time, that we do understand, though, that there's a real issue and a concern there, right? I mean, technology changes in that, how data is being utilized, right? There's a lot of concern around AI, and we're starting to see contractual language now start entering
really?
Around AI,
okay.
You know, and limitations thereof and so forth. And so it's a real thing out there. The cool part is, I think with our internal processes and working with Shira and her team, we're able to understand, you know, when it comes to non-disclosure agreements, how to apply them on projects and use of our data and how we can minimize the utilization of our data when it comes to the machine learning projects that are specifically, you know, going to be made such that, you know, that data cannot be shared outside of that project. Mm-hmm. You know, there's ways that we can figure this out, and we've definitely been able to work really well with Firmus, with Shira and her team on that, you know. So definitely ways to mitigate that real issue that's out there.
So what's the relationship been like? Do you have this relationship with several other trade partners or several other GCs? Or are we kind of on the cutting edge with you as you continue to grow?
Yeah, Flinko are very close to our heart. I was so excited to see the logo when we came in. I sent it right to the team in Israel.
Did you?
And the comments, yeah, I'm going to show you it in a bit. The comments are, we like Flinko. So you're getting a lot of love from Israel. And that's, we're all very thankful for the work you did with us, because we do think that the product is where it is today, thanks to you. So the feedback you gave us, the opportunity you gave us when we were earlier in that process, And so that was very crucial in building this roadmap for us.
Yeah, and I know that we've been able to share a couple of platforms together earlier this year, talking together at the Real AI Summit on a panel, highlighting again, you know, kind of more of how this is really the use of this technology is helping us really extend down our value stream, right? All the benefits that we're seeing through design to construction. And then later this year, we'll be together at the Advancing Construction Quality Conference in Phoenix.
Right.
And have opportunities out there to talk a little bit more internally about Flintco's constructability program, but obviously Firmus being a key component of that as well. So it's great to be able to work together and have this platform to share.
Yeah, so a pat on the back to everybody at Flintco that really helped you, right? It's definitely a team effort, right?
Yeah.
And we've seen case studies, and there's multiple pre-con folks that have provided feedback. So I'm glad to hear that feedback creates joy for you and for your people, right? That's very important for us as well. Like, because we're, as a company, we're all about, you know, creating opportunities for people, right? And leaving this place better than we found it, and helping provide opportunities for other people. And it's awesome to hear a success story like this. Somebody that saw something at a very young age, right? And has brought it to fruition and moved from across the world to help sell it here, to help make this a better industry. And right, the more efficient that we can be, the better our employees' lives are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this is one of those things that actually gives employees time away from work when they previously hadn't had it, right? When they're able to say, hey, we're going to upload this thing, we're going to get it in a couple days, it's going to benefit the architect, it's going to benefit the owner, it's going to benefit our trade partners, right? It's going to help everybody in the process. And then the person that normally does that gets to go home at a regular hour for the next 4 days, maybe 2 weeks, while they're not flipping through pages and highlighting doors and checking details and checking table of contents and that kind of stuff. So it's incredibly crucial when you think of work-life balance and you think of valuing your employees and being able to provide a place that they want to work. And I feel like the more efficient we can be in the things like this we can deploy, like Michael said, make Flintco an even better place to work, which is awesome. And I thank you for that. Thank you for your work to do that. And Michael, coordinate with that. It's incredible that y'all found each other and we've been able to, you know, have this relationship and make us all better. So
yes, definitely.
I was going to say, I reached out to Nicole in Memphis and asked her kind of about Firmus. I know she was kind of in our case study, and I sent her an email the other day and she wrote back like all these wonderful things, and I'd love to read it all. But one of the things that Nicole asked, that I asked you, was really like, what are you looking for on the horizon? Like in the next 4 or 5 years, what do you see? If not Firmus, really where AI could continue mm-hmm. to take the construction industry.
So to understand where we can take it, it's important to understand what the technology is doing behind the scene and the potential that it has. Because essentially what we're doing is we're taking data that is not structured, that is like an image, basically, and we turn that into data that can be processed and can be used to ask questions on this data. So the way that it is right now, you cannot ask the data questions. You cannot ask the drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Can you show me a door with fire rating X that sits within a wall that is fire rating Y? Or all this kind of constructability questions that you have. If you had all of this data, let's say it was in Excel,
mm-hmm.
you could ask questions. Excel is something that you can process as mm-hmm. opposed to image.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the essence of Firmus. It's taking this data and turning it into something that allows you to ask your questions on. And once it's in this form, then we can grow to any type of question that you can imagine. We can grow from the biddability questions that we talked about earlier that allows you to price the job more accurately,
mm-hmm.
to then constructability questions that allows you to build more efficiently, to even questions about profitability of the project, or questions about the team that you need to have in place, or preparations and planning. It just gets bigger and bigger because mm-hmm. all the information is there.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to ask the question.
Right. That's a great way to look at it. What about, you mentioned specifications earlier. Is that the next thing on the
We think about it. Mm-hmm. We do get a lot of questions about, will you develop? Currently, we only review drawings. Mm-hmm. Everything inside the drawings, including the schedules, the details, everything that is within the construction document set. Specs are out of the set, but we are getting a lot of questions about, can you compare between the specs to what's written on the plans? So we definitely consider that as part of the roadmap.
Yeah, that's big, because a lot of times that's where you begin to find the discrepancies, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you see something in the specifications that's a little more stringent than what's on the drawing or what's on the door schedule.
Yeah.
And that's another one of those conversations that when you find it, you're like, uh-oh.
Those are the risk elements that we're really trying to dive into that review process early on. And exactly, I think, the more of that integration between all of the construction documentation, whether that's specs, drawings, and supplemental data points as well, trying to organize and structure that data better for us to understand where those risks are.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think anybody's looking for the tool to do.
But that's exactly the prioritization challenge. And that's why we usually don't tell what the roadmap is, because we know that that's the secret sauce.
Sure.
You need to, part of the things that we do, apart from developing technology, is also analyzing very deeply what are the things that are causing the most amount of issue. And if we discover that specs is one of them, we'll do it. But if we see that continuing with more disciplines is more impactful, we're going to do that first.
I love it. As we get ready to close up, are there any parting thoughts? Michael, is there any parting thoughts you want to leave our listeners with?
I just really think that this is just skimming the surface of what we're going to see over the next decades now in construction. The use of AI, the use of these technologies to not replace necessarily what we're doing, but supplement and really make us free up our time to be more strategic about how we apply it and get more understanding around the complexities and the technicalities of our projects so that we can better plan and manage those. I really appreciate the relationship that we've been able to build with Firmus here over the last year and a half now. We've just renegotiated a new 3-year agreement with them earlier this year, which is great. And you mentioned, folks on our team like Nicole and the team out there in Memphis, or whether it's, Bobby and the group in OKC, or even just Hugh and Rich and the team here in Austin, right? That feedback loop that we get from our pre-con team around the utilization of this tool is all what feeds us helping them develop the modifications and changes that are needed to better suit our needs. So all told, it's just been a great working relationship throughout.
And I will say that it was amazing to see the process that Flinko was going through, because from the very beginning, Flinko brought everyone involved to the room. So it was very clear that this is a company decision and this is a company initiative, and you are doing, so you're not just talking, you're actually doing, and you're actually making sure that people who are responsible for those quality reviews are using AI and know how to use it and integrating it as part of the process, and the owners knows about it and the architect know about it. So the way that you integrated AI was very impressive, and this is something that we tell other companies to say, okay, this is an example of how you can utilize AI and how you can make sure that you put it as an integral part of your workflow. That's the main thing. I'm super excited to be here, and I'm super excited to see how AI is utilized in real world problems.
Absolutely. Well, if you're listening and you're looking for a way to step away from the mundane task and be able to utilize AI in a way that does not replace somebody that's currently working in your office, but it's only going to make them more efficient, reach out to Firmus. See what they can do for you. So Shear, it was awesome to have you on today. I'm glad you're here. And Michael, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the team and you here today as well. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Daniel.
You bet. It's been such a long